leather vest, pants, and a fur coat. George's hair had lost its color decades ago, no doubt, but was thick as hay. Despite his size, he walked unaided, although Nathan noticed a jeweled cane leaning against the table beside the chair. Nathan took that as a signal to approach. "Well met, my lord." George's lips quirked at the dismissal of his rank. He styled himself as a king, but he was no such thing. The regents were powerful, but no matter what they called themselves, the empire had deemed them all to have the equivalent status of counts, which was an unsubtle way of saying that the Federation's rulers were lower rank than the rulers of the empire. Realistically, they were closer to dukes, but Nathan wasn't about to give Tanius or the other regents more respect than they were due. "Indeed, indeed," George mopped his brow with a handkerchief. "I can tell at a glance that you must be Bastian Nathan. You have your mother's eyes and your father's jaw. You're an impressive one." Nathan blinked. What even was happening right now?
"It is an honor to meet you, King George," Anna said, curtsying at precisely the right depth and angle she was obliged to for politeness. "I don't believe we've met, but—"
"Ah, my dear Anna. Oh, yes. I remember you from when you were only this big." George held his hand close to his knee for effect. "It's a shame the way things have played out, given how close your father and I were. Such a shame."
Given George was one of the three conspirators behind the war, Nathan doubted that George felt much shame at all. If he did, then he wouldn't be so bald-faced in trying to suck up to them. Anna's smile turned brittle for a moment, but she quelled her anger.
"It is, George."
The fat man's eyes flashed at the dismissal of his rank, but he remained quiet. Anna continued,
"Hopefully we'll be able to put all of this behind us. I'm surprised to see you here. I heard that only two of the regents were coming in person."
Well, about that,"
George stumbled over his words. "I'd appreciate knowing if any other regents have changed their mind," Nathan said. "I am responsible for security, and knowing how many important guests are coming and why makes it easier to plan around. The last thing we need is for these negotiations to make the war worse."
George's eyes widened. "A fair point. Very well, I'll admit it. How could I miss an opportunity to see Her Imperial Highness in person? The Empire has never deigned to send a member of the Imperial family to negotiate with the Federation."
That was it? He wanted to meet Alice?
"Don't look at me like that. You are fortunate to still be a part of the Empire, and from a family close to the Imperial family."
A scowl crossed George's face briefly.
"I can trace my lineage back to the Empire's Archdukes of yore, and even further back than young trash such as Von Milgar."
Nathan remained silent. It was difficult to take the regent seriously when he admitted to attending the negotiations only because he wanted to meet a personal celebrity of his.
"I know a few others are also coming. Corvell wanted to come, even. He's only a merchant. When would a mere commoner such as him get the chance to speak directly to a member of the oldest royal family on Domar?"
George chuckled.
"Tanius told him no, of course." "You're telling them this?"
Narime blurted out. Raising an eyebrow, George looked past Nathan and Anna.
"Oh, I hadn't seen you there, Narime."
Narime glowered at him. That was possibly the fattest line of bullshit George had fed in his life. Narime's tails were physically larger than she was. Only a blind man could miss her.
"In the end, we want the same thing," George said, his arms outstretched. an end to the current hostilities,
and to deal with the heresy that nearly destroyed my county, Anna added, her tone dark. George's eyes flashed with fear, but his expression remained unmoved.
Of course, Lady Von Clare. We all wish for heresy to be rooted out wherever it hides. Are we not all servants to the goddess?
Not all of us, Nathan thought. As George shuffled back to his table, Nathan worried that he might be more like George than he cared to admit. After all, he was the one paying regular visits to a demonic messenger and doing unspeakable things with her.
Fay returned shortly with Sunstorm and her knights. Nobody else had arrived yet, so Nathan let them grab some food from inside the tent before shooing away the thankful beastkin. George glared at the beastkin who dared to get close to the food, but said nothing. Minutes passed. Nathan drained most of a tankard of lager while chatting with Anna about some of the renovation plans for her manor. Eventually, Alice arrived, and next to Alice was a man that Nathan sincerely hoped hadn't come. An obnoxiously handsome man, with a brutishly deep voice and a set of gleaming plate armor that had probably never seen battle. Theus was here, and appeared to be chatting up Alice.
Chapter 14. If asked, Seraph described Theus as carved from marble and with a face ripped from a painting. She also said his sculptor had forgotten to hollow out his head, which left no space for his brain to go. Nathan considered that a long way of saying that Theus was as stupid as he was handsome. According to Leopold, he was also a coward. Right now, Theus lived up to the idiot side of his description, if not the coward part. He preened as he spoke to Alice, trying to subtly flex his pointlessly huge biceps. Nathan wondered why a bastion even needed muscles that large. The binding stone gave him superhuman strength. Alice's expression was polite, but frozen. Her eyes screamed for somebody to rescue her. Leopold was immediately behind her, but if he said anything, it went in one of Theus's ears and out the other. Scowling, Nathan took a step forward.
"Enough, you dolt," a cold voice drawled. "I brought you here at Princess Alice's request, given the seriousness of the charges being levied against you. You insult both yourself and the Federation with your antics."
Tonius stepped into view. He pushed Theus's head down. It was a comical sight, given the height and size differences. Theus was a giant of a man, standing well over 6 foot, and with biceps the size of Tonius's torso. By contrast, Tonius looked every part an ordinary old man. His white hair was closely cropped. He was clean-shaven, and he wore simple but refined robes. Theus could break the old man over his knee. Despite that, Theus let himself be humiliated in front of some of the most powerful people in Domar, and the princess he had been trying to sleep with. Alice covered her mouth, but Nathan saw her smile from his vantage point. After letting go of Theus, Tonius strode into the center of the tent. His sharp eyes found Nathan. The two men locked gazes. It was only the second time in Nathan's life that he had met Tonius's gaze. Once again, it proved difficult. Tonius's eyes burned with an inner fire. He was like a man possessed. If the eyes were the window to the soul, then Tonius's soul spoke of a conviction that nothing could overturn. A generous man would say he was driven. A sane man would say that Tonius was mad. Tonius frowned, then swept up to a keg and poured a lager. Afterward, he took a seat. The afternoon was uneventful. Tonius said nothing, besides an introduction and some pleasantries that sounded very unpleasant.
Fius sulked in the corner while one of his duo gem champions stroked his chest and probably muttered obscene things to him. Only two aspects of Alice's speeches drew much attention and ire from the Federation regents. The first were the heresy accusations. Glares were thrown at Fius when Alice read them out. Nobody dared to so much as look at Tanius, although Nathan heard some grumblings over the food later. Tanius didn't react and simply sipped his beer. But what really annoyed the regents was the claim that the Empire's terms for peace were the new borders. George, in particular, was furious that he was going to lose land.
"Perhaps you could have thought ahead and not started a war," one of the regents muttered.
Shouts erupted in response, and George rose to his feet. A fight nearly broke out within the Federation representatives, while Tanius rolled his eyes. Eventually, the champions and knights intervened and pushed everybody apart.
"Is that normal?" Nathan asked Narime.
"I wouldn't say normal, but it isn't uncommon," Narime said with a grimace. "Even Tanius gets involved sometimes. He knocked Duke Terius out last year."
Nathan blinked. "With a chair or a bottle?"
"Neither. With his fists."
Nathan re-evaluated the evil old man. While he didn't need to worry about Tanius's haymaker, it still meant he was a much different person than he had thought. The eastern cities were a much rougher place than Falmir, Nathan supposed. Tanius hadn't been born into power, but had instead claimed it through scheming and violence. As negotiations for the day wound up, Nathan busied himself with security. Fights and other quarrels broke out. He had his magic users check that none of the food or drink was being poisoned. Sunstorm captured a few spies, and the Federation dumped a couple back in return, but no assassination attempts were made. Alice's tent remained impregnable, besides who she invited in. When a messenger told Nathan that his presence was requested, he double-checked everything in the encampment. Seraph called him a coward, and he glared back at her.
"I'm going to be tied up listening to her practice and prepare all night. I want to make sure everything is fine," Nathan said.
"That's why I'm here. Go handle your princess," Seraph said. "You seem rather practiced at it for a man who's never dealt with royalty before."
Nathan froze at the comment, but Seraph walked away to handle another matter. There were too many things to take care of for the two of them to chat and bicker. And every moment he wasted was another moment that Alice grew more annoyed.
"Oh, so you were coming. I worried that you were annoyed with me," Alice said when he joined her.
"I am responsible for security and this entire negotiation, Your Highness," Nathan said dryly.
"Thank you for reminding me that I have no idea how to handle diplomacy of this scale, despite barging in on you."
Alice gave him an odd look. "Although where you learned how to handle it is an excellent question. Leopold is evasive on the matter, but last I remember, you ran a county before becoming a bastion. Counts don't handle international negotiation."
"International negotiation is the same as other diplomatic events, just bigger," Nathan bullshitted.
"Oh, yes, except for the greatly increased security, the need to build the entire location wholesale, the greatly increased risk of poisoning and assassination, and the fact that nobody can be relied on as an intermediary," Alice said sharply. "I was always taught that negotiations with enemies took place with a neutral power to help."
"That's ideal, but there isn't one," Nathan replied.
He looked around the tent. Alice hadn't bothered to unpack, he noticed. She wore a gorgeous blood-red dress that left her calves bare, and shoes that had decorative straps up to her knees, but he saw no sign of any other princessy things in her tent.
"Is Leopold not joining us tonight?"
"I wanted to talk to you. After tomorrow, there's a good chance I won't see you for, let's say, a long time."
Alice screwed up her face, then let her smile return.
"And you say there isn't one, but there is a massive city-state to the north,
and a nation full of fairies and elves not far from it. Both share borders with both the Empire and the Federation.
And both the Aurelian Spires and the Republic of Arcadia are implicated in Tanius's plan, Nathan said. The time they could be considered neutral powers passed the moment they signed defensive pacts with the Federation.
Ah, yes, such normal knowledge for a fresh bastion and count, Alice said. Don't take this the wrong way. I adore your help here. I can only imagine the things we could accomplish if we worked together in the Empire.
Alice's gaze became distant. But it makes me question things.
You Bastions are always so damn secretive, and you're fairly open. How much does Leopold know that Grandpa doesn't? What does Tarbin know that makes him so angry about non-humans?
Not much, Nathan said.
About non-humans?
About anything.
Harsh, Alice giggled. She paused and gave Nathan a soft smile. Thank you, Nathan. It's been a pleasure.
We still have the trip back, he said,
finding this meeting a bit odd. It was very unlike what he had expected.
But what had he expected, and why?
Maybe, but I know that Uncle Leopold wants me back in the capital as soon as possible. If we can get a peace treaty, then there's no reason for me to remain here. Plus, Charlotte is so antsy. I thought she'd enjoy being away from home, but all she does is squeak and sneak looks when she thinks nobody is looking.
That sounded nothing like the Princess Charlotte that Nathan knew.
Good night, Nathan. I'll see you in the morning. Try to get some sleep this time.
Alice paused, and her cheeks flushed.
Actual sleep. I know what you do with your champions.
After letting out a cough, Nathan said, Good night, Alice.
The beaming smile she gave him when he called her by her name was a memory he would treasure. As he wandered back to his tent, he realized why he had been expecting something different. Alice reminded him of Charlotte. Everything about the way she acted was like a more boyish, younger version of Charlotte. Where Charlotte was an otherwise typical princess with a deeply aggressive streak and extensive knowledge, Alice was a tomboy who adopted her princess persona out of necessity and her desire to support the Empire. But the results felt similar somehow. Was this another effect of his transportation to this timeline? It reminded him of the strange coincidence that his father in both timelines had been a bastion that he had become estranged from. A question for Kadria when he returned to Garrick Pass. For now, he had one more day of negotiations, one more day to protect Alice from any threats, and to see how Tanius would attempt to torch the peace treaty.
Chapter 15. If anybody had mistaken Tanius's silence from the previous day for weakness, they were sorely mistaken. On the second day of negotiations, Tanius took the offensive. He didn't allow any of the other regents to get a word in, and began his attack the moment pleasantries ended.
The Federation will not accept a peace treaty brokered under duress, Tanius uttered. Your accusations are one step short of blackmail, and your refusal to revert to pre-hostility borders belies your true purpose.
Our true purpose? Alice said, eyes wide in disbelief. And what might that be, High Lord Tanius?
Tanius's lip curled up in a sneer as he prepared to launch a blistering verbal assault.
The restoration of the Anfeng Empire to its former glory, of course. The land you've seized once belonged to the Empire, before King George II's family seceded from your failing state. If you had the chance, you'd take the rest of his land as well. Everybody knows that the Empire is at war with the Order of Trafome in order to reclaim your lost territory. You've even insulted Falmir over similar pretenses.
That's a lie, Alice snapped.
She hid a grimace as she realized she took Tanius's bait. Is it? Weren't you dispatched by Emperor Gortal to negotiate with the Kingdom of Falmir after the Imperial Diet gravely insulted them? But you're here now. Such amazing negotiation skills at such a young age, my dear princess. Tanius's voice oozed with disdain. This time, Alice kept her temper in check, and it was Anna who stepped in to support her.
I understand that the Empire is confusing for a foreigner, but you shouldn't say things that may mislead others, High Lord.
Oh? Tanius raised an eyebrow and leaned back in his chair. He took the opportunity to drain half his tankard of ale.
Falmir lodged a protest over claims made by specific nobles, who happened to be members of the Diet. Saying that the Diet insulted Falmir is like saying that the Empire is accusing the Regency Council of heresy because one of the Federation's regents committed heresy.
Anna smiled sweetly at Tanius. The glare she received in return would have melted steel if Tanius had the power.
I appreciate your detailed elaboration, Lady Von Clare. It still doesn't explain Her Highness's presence here today.
I am still in talks with Falmir, Alice said. I would appreciate it if you do not insult both me and the Kingdom of Falmir by implying issues with our relationship that do not exist, particularly in such an environment. It makes you appear insincere.
Does it? Tanius asked.
It does, as does implying that we want peace for the purpose of expansion. If I knew you were such a warmonger that you would undermine these peace talks, I would never have wasted my time on you, Alice said coldly.
Tanius smirked in return. Then he rose to his feet, strode over to a keg, and began to slowly refill his tankard. The other regents took the opportunity to stammer out apologies and excuses. Unlike Tanius, they didn't want war, and they appeared to believe Alice's words. But the damage had been done. Nathan caught Tanius's eye as the regent wandered back to the table. Tanius raised his tankard in a mocking salute and winked at Nathan. Tanius's good cheer was for good reason. While he had received pushback, he had landed serious blows. More to the point, he had revealed that he knew that Anna had been appointed to meet with Falmir. That was supposed to be a secret. No doubt Leopold's mind was racing with suspicions as to who the traitor was. Who was Nathan kidding? Leopold immediately suspected Tarbin. Everything led back to the Nationalists, and too many of Tanius's plans had aligned with their political ploys. Nerevia's appointment as Anna's bodyguard made things too easy. But Nathan felt differently. Tanius had thought that Alice had broken off talks with Falmir. If Nerevia was the leak, then Tanius should have known that didn't happen. And if Nerevia wasn't the leak, had Alice accidentally revealed that Princess Charlotte was nearby? The thought chilled Nathan to the bone. Relief ran through him that he had left Sen behind at Garrick Pass. Tanius rejoined the debate and immediately took over.
None of this addresses my issues. The Empire is seizing Federation territory under false pretenses, and there is plentiful evidence to suggest that this was planned in advance.
Bastion Leopold explained the heresy in excruciating detail yesterday, High Lord, Alice said. There are no false pretenses. The Federation invaded the Empire and attempted to cause a demonic invasion to weaken our defenses. That is fact.
Facts without evidence are supposition, Tanius said, sneering. And poor supposition at that. Bastion Fierce is a dutiful servant of the Watcher Omria, and has been for years.
And while you used Bastian Leopold to accuse me, your evidence comes from a far less reliable man.
Tanya spun and pointed a finger at Nathan, who stared back in surprise. Narime took several steps away from Nathan, her tails curling around her, although she glared daggers at Tanya's as she did so.
Bastian Nathan is not,
Leopold tried to say as he stood.
He is the one who defended Garrick Pass. He claims to have experienced the ley line disruption and to have dealt with the demonic invasion it caused. He even claims we attacked the Empire first,
Tanya scoffed.
But who is Bastian Nathan Straub? You left this out yesterday, but he is the son of the infamous Bastian Tarban von Straub. And if there's anyone who supports the expansion of the Empire, it is the Crimson Warhound.
Nathan remained silent, despite his desire to point out that his father had disowned him. This was political theater, and he had been instructed to remain out of it. No good would come of stepping in until somebody at the negotiating table instructed him to. Especially because he didn't know what Tanius's game was. Surprisingly, it was King George who spoke up first, while the rest of the table remained silent. He mopped at his brow as he said,
"As you well know, Bastian Nathan has been disowned by his family. That is why he does not have the von particle in his name anymore, despite being the firstborn child of the family."
Tanya shot George a glare, and the chubby regent looked down at his half-empty platefuls of food. Deuterius raised an eyebrow and glanced at Leopold.
"May I ask why Bastian Nathan was disowned by the Warhound? I must admit that I was already aware of his connection to the Warhound, and it was quite disconcerting to me."
"I am not at liberty to say," Leopold said, but then winked. "But if you know me at all, and the politics surrounding me, then I will say that Bastian Nathan was disowned for the same reason that I supported his entry to the Academy."
Tarius snorted.
"I suppose the Beastkin Knights should have been a giveaway. Not to mention that he stood within 5 feet of Narime without abusing her."
Nathan was amazed that Tarban's reputation was so terrible that even people half the world away knew what an awful person he was.
"That is a convenient cover," Tanius continued, brow furrowed. "But it leaves out his inexperience. I questioned every bastion in the Federation about the claims made about ley line disruption. Not even one agreed that a demonic invasion would result."
That drew gasps from the regents. Leopold grimaced. This was something they knew could happen, particularly after Narime had revealed that even she hadn't known about it. Whoever Seraph had learned it from had kept it secret enough that it hadn't spread within the Federation. And while Leopold was aware of it, it wasn't common knowledge among bastions. The Empire had far more advanced magical scientists than the Federation, and it barely understood how reverse cascades occurred.
"Furthermore," Tanius said, his voice rising in triumph, "how can we believe the word of a bastion whose evidence comes from champions who defected from the Federation? Champions Sunstorm and Seraph betrayed us. You haven't even brought them up, Princess."
Alice remained quiet on this point. It was one of those that Nathan had briefed her on. As tempting as it was to claim that Seraph and Sunstorm were reliable because they had been part of the Federation, that wouldn't help during negotiations. Defectors were considered reliable by the nation they defected to, but despised by the one they defected from. There was a reason Seraph wasn't in the tent.
"I see," Tanya said. "You don't leave me convinced.
How disappointing. I had come prepared to hand over Fierce if you had produced even one whit of evidence against us, as a gesture of goodwill.
Goodwill?
Fierce shouted. He shut up when everybody glared at him. Tonius coughed and resumed his speech.
But this is all you have. Baseless claims of heresy from traitors and a greenhorn. Connections to one of the most infamous of imperialists in the Empire. And a claim for peace while seizing territory that isn't your own.
With one last sneer, Tonius said,
Is there anything else, Princess? Or are we done here?
Alice stared back at Tonius, her face expressionless. Her eyes flickered to Nathan, who grimaced but held his tankard tightly. In the end, Tonius had come prepared to torch the peace treaty. The other regents knew his game. He had only needed one solid bit of footing to keep the war going. How frustratingly similar to the method the Nationalists had used in the Diet.
Then Alice said, I do. Or rather, Bastian Nathan does.
She laid an arm out toward Nathan, palm open.
If you would, Bastian.
Leopold's eyes nearly popped out of his skull. Anna looked between Leopold and Alice in shock, her mouth opening and closing like a fish. The regents appeared confused.
I do not believe he is part of the negotiation, Princess, Tonius said blandly.
You attacked me for allowing Leopold to speak on his behalf earlier, High Lord. Or was that merely a rhetorical device, and all of your efforts to undermine him as empty as your pretenses for peace?
Alice said. Her tone didn't raise or lower by even a beat. Tonius remained silent. Then he waved a hand at Nathan.
Fine, make a fool of yourself.
But Tonius's eyes told a different story. His smug expression evaporated, and he glared at Nathan with all of his fury. Nathan drained his tankard, then held it out to Nadime. She looked around in confusion for several moments before creeping up to him and taking it. Then he looked back at Tonius and matched the man's gaze once more. That same terrifying sense of conviction stared back at him.
Tell me, have you forgotten about those nobles and soldiers that we captured outside of Lady Nair's tower?
Nathan said. Tonius blinked, but said nothing.
Allow me to remind the regents that the land immediately to the east of the pass had always been imperial territory. How could the Empire have attacked first if we fought a major battle to take back a mage tower that belongs to one of our sorcerers?
Nathan shook his head.
Never mind that we have Federation nobles in the Laeik that have admitted that they were ordered by their regents to invade the Empire. They're under duress and fear for their lives, Tonius said. And the other soldiers? And every officer we captured?
Nathan smirked.
What about all the bandits in our land that admit that they were being paid by the Federation? You don't accept your former champion's testimony, fine, but dozens, if not hundreds, of other people say the same thing. That doesn't mean heresy. A demonic invasion happened almost the moment I stopped your ley line disruption. And if you're so confident, why don't you ask Bastions from Arcadia or the Spires about what you did?
Nathan asked. Tonius clammed up. The other regents began to murmur. Leopold leaned back in his chair, eyes narrowed.
Speaking of the Spires, if you didn't attack first, shouldn't they be supporting you? They could have seen the battle in Forzel Valley from their windows, but they backed away from your defensive pact. And this is after you spent years greasing the wheels of the Council of Aurelia to gain their support. What nonsense are you spouting? Tonius shouted. How else did you get a defensive pact from a city-state that famously despises humans?
Nathan shook his head.
In the end, though,
None of this means anything.
Silence overtook the tent. Even Alice appeared confused by Nathan's last line.
I assume you want me to take your bait and ask why?
Tonius drawled.
I had hoped you would ask with a little more spirit, but I suppose that works, Nathan said. None of this matters, because you will never accept peace. Your schemes have failed. Everybody has seen through your lies, and your allies have abandoned you. Did you tell Corvell to stay behind, or did he refuse to come because he couldn't back you, but wouldn't betray you?
Bold words with no substance.
I am all substance. Nathan pointed a finger at Tonius. You had a chance to wriggle out of this. Fius is even here as a political sacrifice, but you refused to offer him up. The idea of sacrificing anything appalls you. You have to be in control, and you'll see everything burn before you'll release even one of your fingers over the Federation that you've ruled with an iron grip.
The regent stared at Nathan in shock. After all, he had just said that Tonius was their ruler and that they were pointless. After several moments, Tonius raised his head and gave Nathan an upturned look.
And are you any different?
Nathan blinked.
What?
I asked you a question, Tonius said.
I'm the one trying to organize a peace treaty, Nathan said.
Of course you are, Tonius purred. And I signed a defensive pact with the Spires and Arcadia. But in truth, you are the puppet master here. Everybody dances to your tune. That's why you had to be the one to step in at the end, after lurking in the corner and organizing everything. You are the only one who opposed me. Everybody else is a pawn in a match between us.
Tonius chuckled. My mistake has been failing to realize it until now. But know that this game is far from over.
With those final words, Tonius swept out of the tent. The regents rose from their seats, roaring with rage and confusion as they chased after Tonius. They wanted answers that they wouldn't get. Slowly, Fius trailed after the regents like a stupid, lost lamb.
Well, that didn't go like I expected it to, Nathan said.
Nobody said anything. Those at the table likely hadn't heard him over the shouting, but Narime should have. Looking around, Nathan couldn't see the fox anywhere. She and her 6 silver fluffy tails had already vanished. He was left to pick up the pieces of the failed negotiation.
Chapter 16.
The return to Garrick Pass was swift. Tonius and the other regents left almost immediately, leaving their soldiers behind. As tempting as it was to send Sunstorm after them, Fius's champions were too great a threat. Nathan let the Federation retreat. He debriefed his officers, who were confident they could dismantle the encampment without issue. Once the Federation soldiers began to leave, Nathan considered his job done. With that, the negotiations were over. They had gone as well as he had expected, if worse than he had hoped. Narime was missing and had presumably returned to the Federation. Alice had retreated to her tent, although Anna and Leopold were with her. The camp was being patrolled by Nathan's champions, just in case something went awry. Within hours of Tonius's tantrum, they set off for Fort Tobram. Nathan received no midnight summons from Alice. The failure of the negotiations hit her hard, and he worried that Tonius's words had affected her. More to the point, he wondered if she had expected him to somehow salvage things at the end there. Once back in the fortress at Garrick Pass, Nathan assembled everybody in one of the larger sitting rooms. Leopold, Anna, Seraph, Fay, Sen, Sunstorm, and Vera were present.
"Where's Alice?" Nathan asked, feeling he already knew the answer.
She is with Princess Charlotte. Nerevia and May are with her, Leopold said, nursing a finger of brandy. May was the duo gem champion that Leopold had left here during the negotiations, and who often accompanied Leopold in the shadows. Nathan grimaced. Even now, Alice was unwilling to meet with them. What a mess.
You don't trust Nerevia, Anna said suddenly.
After what happened, how can I? Leopold said bitterly. Seraph raised an eyebrow and looked at Nathan questioningly.
The lamps flickered for a few moments, but nobody gave them more than a glance. Shrugging, Nathan took a seat and raised his own glass of brandy.
Tanius somehow knew that Anna had been sent to smooth relations with Falmir. I assume that was a secret.
Yes, Leopold grumbled.
It was frustrating that you even knew that she was aligned with His Majesty, but knowing her movements? That is a bridge too far. Somebody leaked some of the most sensitive information from within the Empire to the Federation.
Would Tarban betray the Empire? Seraph asked. I thought he wanted the restoration of Imperial glory. How would selling us out help him?
Anna frowned, swirling her red wine. A lot of the movements that the Nationalists made aligned too well with Tanius's moves. If Tarban is working with Tanius, it's probably because they have some sort of deal. It's not like Tarban can't betray the Federation later.
There wouldn't be a later, Nathan thought. The Federation had planned to effectively destroy the Empire, even if by accident.
But that's also why Nathan was suspicious of Tarban's involvement.
We're jumping to conclusions, Nathan said. Seraph's right. Tarban's an ass, but he hates foreigners as much as he hates non-humans.
Nerevia is his champion, Leopold pointed out.
I don't see Tanius bending over and begging to be whipped, Nathan drawled.
The eyebrows of every woman in the room shot up.
Thank you for that awful mental image, Leopold said with a grimace, as he slugged back his brandy.
He poured another finger into his glass.
More to the point, Tanius knew that Alice met with Falmir, but didn't know that she had brought Charlotte here, Nathan said. He seemed surprised when Alice countered him. If Nerevia was the source, then Tanius would have already known.
Leopold froze.
I hadn't thought of that. But that raises further questions. If not Tarban, then who else? And did Alice possibly leak the location of Princess Charlotte?
She didn't mention Charlotte, Nathan said after a few moments.
No, but it's possible that Tanius knew that Alice was meeting with her. Her safety may now be at stake.
Leopold scowled.
This was easier when it was just Tarban. Now this has become a series of shadow games.
Should we all start searching for strings on our backs? I already checked for mine, Anna said. Sorry, Nathan, but if you're my puppet master, then you must have forgotten to attach any to me.
If you feel left out, I can add them now.
Nathan made threading motions in the air.
No?
No, thank you, but I'll take great joy in being your countess. Once you take control of the Empire, I'll be de facto Empress.
Leopold rolled his eyes.
Do not joke about that.
He thrust a finger at Nathan.
You shouldn't have riled up Tanius like that. I have never seen or heard of him acting like that. There's no telling what he'll do next.
Nathan couldn't help but agree. The closest that Tanius had ever come to acting like that in Nathan's timeline had been in the moments before Narime had incinerated him. The aftermath had been the complete destruction of the Federation and a mass evacuation.
Wasn't Nathan right? Faye asked.
She avoided alcohol and instead nursed a black coffee.
There's a difference between being correct and doing the smart thing in the moment, Anna said. If I stood up in the Diet and called Tarban a warmongering monster that was plotting against the Emperor, hated non-humans, and can't even run his own county, I'd be correct. It would also be very stupid and possibly life-shortening.
Oh, Faye's eyes widened. I feel like I missed some genuine fireworks, Vera said.
Nothing really happened here. I did see the princess a few times,
Sen shrugged.
The negotiations weren't supposed to be about fireworks, Leopold said.
He sighed.
I don't think they're a complete failure, even if Alice is upset about them, Nathan said.
Don't worry too much about Alice, Anna said. When he looked at her, she shrugged in return and gave him a cryptic smile.
You have a war to worry about.
And that's why I don't think the negotiations were a complete failure. Tanius admitted in front of the other regents that he was manipulating them and that he was behind everything, Nathan said.
I wouldn't call what he said an admission of guilt, Leopold said.
He called everybody in the room a pawn in a chess match, Leopold.
A pause.
True, Leopold said. In the end, there's likely to be a serious chink in the Regency Council that we can,
Nathan was saying, when there was a knock on the door. Everybody turned around. Given how important their meeting was, it seemed highly unlikely that they were being interrupted by a servant for anything trivial. Sen stepped over and opened the door. A pale-faced beastkin knight stepped in, his silken horsetail hanging low. He gulped when he saw who and what he was interrupting. His breastplate clanged with a sharp salute.
Bastion, I have something to report, the beastkin said, eyes unfocused.
Relax, Nathan said. What's happened?
We can't get through to Fort Tobram, sir, the beastkin stuttered.
The mutterings behind Nathan stopped, resulting in a deathly silence. He gestured for the soldier to continue.
The wireless doesn't work. The captain told Michael to try the mirror, and it took ages to find. But
the beastkin began to blather, and Nathan let him get it out of his system.
So you couldn't get through to Fort Tobram using any of our magical communication methods?
Nathan confirmed. The beastkin blinked.
That's right, sir. You don't seem concerned.
I'm the Bastion. It's my job to handle situations like this, Nathan said.
And I don't think it's as bad as you fear.
The beastkin glanced past Nathan with a quizzical look. Then he looked back at Nathan. Something ran through the soldier's mind, and color began to return to his face. He snapped off another salute.
What are your orders, sir? He asked,
voice certain again. Truthfully, Nathan didn't know. He needed to exude confidence, because doing anything less was a recipe for disaster. Right now, he knew that his officers were doing their best to keep his soldiers busy, but they would be panicking as well. As far as his soldiers were concerned, Fort Tobram had just been taken by the Federation. A fortress that couldn't be reached by any form of communication was under heavy siege, and given this was winter, there was no way for Nathan to rally heavy reinforcements in time to save it. But was that really the case?
Sunstorm, Nathan said.
I'll check the gateway, she said, rising to her feet and vanishing with a glimmer of her onyx gem.
Sir? The beastkin soldier asked.
Don't worry about it, Nathan said.
The gateway was a secret from most of the soldiers in Garrick Pass, in order to prevent it from leaking to the Federation.
Have you tried contacting Trontia, Forzel Valley, or any other positions on the far side of Garrick Pass?
The beastkin furrowed his brow in thought.
Kinda, sir. The captain tried to check with some of the forts and supply posts near Fort Tobram. No answer either.
He figured.
He trailed off.
But not Trontia or anywhere else on this side of the pass?
Nathan asked.
No, sir.
After a few moments, the beastkin's eyes widened.
You think this is some sort of equipment failure? Like what some of the veterans say about the, ley line stuff?
Ley line disruption. It's more likely than the Federation sweeping in and capturing everything west of Garrick Pass overnight, without a single message reaching us.
Nathan gave the beastkin a sardonic smile
and received a relaxed grin in return.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense, sir.
A pause.
So, what now?
Go back to your captain and have him try to contact Trontia and other positions this side of the pass. Sen will take over, so relay anything through her, Nathan said.
Sir,
the beastkin said. He snapped off a salute and ran off down the corridor.
Should I go? Sen asked a moment later.
Nathan closed the door and shook his head. He rubbed the bridge of his nose and tried to process what he had heard. There wasn't much, but he already had a hunch as to what was happening. It's not like there were many other possibilities, and he had experienced this far too many times. The issue was that the timing was uncannily good for the Federation to be a coincidence. Nathan stared at the lamps. They had flickered earlier, hadn't they?
If this is a ley line disruption, shouldn't we be mobilizing everything in anticipation of an imminent assault?
Anna asked. Her wine glass was firmly on the table, out of reach. The same went for every other glass of alcohol in the room. Nobody was drinking anymore. Seraph poured cups of strong black coffee in the corner. Idly, Nathan wondered if Seraph already knew what was happening. She knew the sorts of things that Tanius would pull, and was knowledgeable about binding stones and ley lines.
He doesn't think this is ley line disruption,
Leopold said darkly.
Eh? Faye squeaked. But didn't you say...
Faye trailed off, her face falling as she saw Nathan's expression and realized she had fallen for the confidence trick he had used on the guard.
Leopold's right. Ley line disruption is impossible, Nathan said.
Why?
Anna pressed.
Vera chipped in.
Because it happened too fast. It took months for Sen to shut down communication between us last time. The wireless worked perfectly yesterday, but it's inoperable today.
That's not ley line disruption. Something much bigger happened.
Sen's eyes widened as something clicked in her mind. Her jaw dropped.
No, is this...
Go on. I'll be impressed if you get this, Nathan said.
It's a cascade, isn't it? Sen whispered. You've explained that ley line disruptions produced effects similar to it, and that reverse cascades happen because of it. So if something big is happening at once to knock out magical communication, that means a huge surge of magic is running down the ley lines.
Leopold let out a low whistle.
I see why you chose her as the Ifrit's vessel, assuming that the Ifrit didn't tell her the secret.
Sen shot him a dirty look.
He didn't, although he did confirm my suspicion once I thought of it.
Yes, this is a cascade, Nathan explained to the rest of the room. Somewhere nearby, demonic energy has overflowed from a portal and washed down the ley lines. No, maybe not even nearby. For all we know, the cascade could stretch across the entire eastern border of the Empire. That would be the largest cascade in centuries, Leopold said. His eyes narrowed. We don't have any idea where it may have come from.
Nathan tapped his head.
We need to check. While we wait for Sunstorm and the guards to report back, we have another method. I'll check my binding stones. Leopold, you...
He trailed off. Leopold's eyes had already glazed over. The old man was already in his mental world, checking on his binding stones.
Yeah, do that, Nathan muttered.
Seraph smirked at Nathan. The rest of the room looked confused. Ignoring them, Nathan dove into his binding stones. It didn't take long to find what he was looking for. The flow of magic through the ley lines around both of his binding stones was like a natural disaster. An avalanche was the most appropriate comparison. Energy roared through the ley lines from the north, shredding the delicate balance of magic in the world. Many smaller ley lines were completely overwhelmed and had been reduced to noise. South of the binding stones, the surge was muted. Fort Tobram still had fairly significant flows pouring out of it, which suggested it wasn't stopping the cascade dead.
Binding stones to the south and east would feel the effects of the cascade. That meant invasions would be triggered in the Federation. But Garrick Pass was like a sponge. Not a single drop of energy appeared to escape it. The ley lines around the binding stone were frizzled and useless from the sheer concentration of energy, but nothing was wrong even a mile or two south of the fortress.
"This is bad," Nathan gasped as he returned to reality. "Really, really bad."
"Bad does not begin to describe this," Leopold muttered. He glared at his coffee and reached for his flask. Before he could pour it into his coffee, Seraph grabbed his hand.
"Perhaps you should remain sober," Seraph said.
The old man glared up at her, but her iron grip remained in place. He relented. The flask returned to his hip.
"For Zell Valley and almost every binding stone under my control has been hit. Everything north of Garrick Pass and as far east as Alaik. I suspect even Bastion Malus's binding stone in Alaik has been hit."
Leopold cursed.
"The only possible cause is that the portal in the spires has suffered a cascade. That has never happened before. They have a Tri-Gem champion. What could possibly cause them to close their portal early?"
If Nathan was being generous, then a messenger could. Realistically, there was only one option.
"Taunius," Nathan and Seraph said at the same time. They looked at each other and grimaced.
Leopold's eyes closed.
"I had hoped you wouldn't say that. Nathan, you accused Taunius of working with the Council of Aurelia. That sounded baseless at the time, but this confirms it. Do you know what this means?"
"Oh, no."
"I don't," Nathan lied. "A cascade of this magnitude could cause untold devastation. If I wasn't preparing for open war with the Federation, I wouldn't have the champions in position to stop so many invasions at once," Leopold said. "The entire eastern border of the Empire would fall. And with that..."
He trailed off, his expression darkening.
"Alaik," Nathan said.
He knew what came next. History was trying absurdly hard to correct itself. Somebody or something really hated what Nathan was trying to do.
"Nathan, you seemed a little too worried earlier," Seraph said, her gaze pointed.
"That's because we have a much bigger problem here."
He grimaced and ran a hand down his face. "Garrick is soaking up way too much energy from the cascade. That's not natural, and I know exactly who is responsible." Leopold stared at Nathan.
"I assume I should rally every soldier in the fortress and surrounding region," Seraph said.
"We have other problems as well," Nathan said.
"We do?"
Leopold asked. "Because I do not like what you just implied."
Nathan ignored him. He strode up to the window. Unlike recently, he could see out of it. The walls were lit up. Soldiers shuffled along them at speed. Some were outside the walls, patrolling for enemies that weren't coming. After all, the enemies would appear from inside the keep.
"We've lost all communications. The Federation is on edge, but they're in the same boat. The cascade is large enough that it's going to affect their border forts. I'm certain of it, based on what I felt at Fort Tobram," Nathan explained. "You're a new bastion. Reading flows during a cascade is something you've never been trained in," Leopold said.
"You're acting surprised about the things he's somehow experienced in now, Leopold?"
Anna asked in disbelief. Leopold clammed up, and his expression turned stony.
"Things are tense on the borders. The first thing our soldiers assumed when they couldn't reach Fort Tobram was that we had been invaded. What do you think my officers at Fort Tobram are thinking right now? What about the Federation soldiers along the border who can't reach anywhere else in the Federation?" Nathan asked. "If they don't attack first, they risk being attacked in the worst possible situation.
The room remained silent, but everybody understood his point.
The cascade isn't only about threatening our fortresses with demons. It's about knocking out communications long enough for frightened officers to make dumb decisions and kick off the war early. That forces the hand of many of the regions who might not want to be involved.
Nathan sighed. We need to somehow tell the Federation that we aren't attacking and calm down our soldiers.
Why would the Federation believe us? Seraph asked. I'm persona non grata.
Nathan remained silent, but looked out the window. There was one person who still had the ability to communicate over long distances with magic right now, but she had vanished.
Narime, Seraph said.
She could stop this from happening. Without her, the best we can do is rely on Sunstorm's gem abilities to support Fort Tabram, Nathan said.
It was a terrible plan, but Nathan didn't have any real options to stop the Federation from launching an assault. Sunstorm returned and confirmed that the gateway was out of commission, which made sense given the sheer amount of demonic energy overwhelming the ley lines. Winter prevented Nathan from sending many of his soldiers east through the pass. Sunstorm could move swiftly with her gem abilities, and Nathan could control his binding stone from afar, but that was as much as he could do. If the Federation invaded en masse, that meant all-out war.
I believe we still have one other topic, Leopold said. You implied earlier that a messenger was invading Garrick Pass.
Nathan's champions remained silent, as they already knew this. But Anna and Vera stared at Nathan in shock. Before he could respond, the door slammed open.
Nathan, what's going on? There are guards everywhere, and I can't reach Grandpa,
Alice shouted. Behind her followed another young woman with long, curly brown hair and a bust size that Nathan wasn't about to forget. Princess Charlotte had finally shown herself at the darkest hour. Chapter 17. Narime. The Beastkin maids had only finished laying out dinner when the pulse of magic ran through Narime. Blinding light flooded the room for a moment as wisps panicked. They dimmed a moment later, but rested against the bottom of their blown glass lamps. Duke Tereus clicked his tongue and scratched his balding head.
As much as I like the old style of lamp, wisps are far too unreliable. I wonder what set them off.
He raised his ceramic sake cup to his mouth and looked at his guest.
Narime, is something wrong?
Lost in focus, Narime didn't answer at first. Her tails weaved a slow but complex pattern behind her. She wore an elegant kimono of blue and gold that her mother had gifted her when she grew her fourth tail and officially became an adult. Her hair was done up with hairpins the length of her forearms, each crafted from gold, and glittering with non-magical sapphires to match her champion gems.
Narime,
Tereus repeated. He lowered his sake cup, then gestured for the servants to leave him. The horse beastkin maids bowed and left. The room was magically warded with aural barriers to prevent eavesdropping. Grimacing, Tereus bit into a piece of grilled cod. Ostensibly, they were eating a seafood platter styled after those served in the Kurai Peninsula. But only Narime's half had any raw fish, and there was precious little of it. The Federation were wary of raw fish, given how easy it was to become ill from a poorly stored or prepared one. In a country as cutthroat as this, Narime didn't blame anybody for being suspicious of the origins of their food. She rarely ate raw fish anywhere on Domar. Even Duke Tereus had precious few suppliers that he trusted, and he lacked any preference for it. He served it purely for Narime.
Something has gone horribly wrong, Narime said when she returned to her senses.
Tereus froze, a piece of fish halfway to his mouth. He lowered it to his plate and cleansed his palate with some water.
Define horribly wrong, please.
A cascade has triggered somewhere to the north. I can't sense exactly where, but it's enormous. I haven't felt anything like it since...
She trailed off as memories overwhelmed her. Faces of friends and family that she could never see again entered her mind and left it almost as quickly.
I understand,
Tereus said, a sad smile on his face as he looked away.
Are we in danger?
I don't know. It depends on how close your portal was to an invasion, Narime said.
I have the wireless. Let's...
Narime shook her head. It won't work. This cascade is massive. Communications will be out from Aleik to Tartus.
Tartus was Tanius's home city and the capital of his province. It sat roughly halfway between the Hakim Desert and the Garak Mountains.
That far?
Tereus's mouth gaped for several seconds.
How can a cascade be that massive? When we close portals in Hakim, or even here, they only stretch a binding stone or two. There are at least 6 binding stones between Tartus and Aleik. More, even.
Which makes this suspicious, Narime said.
She rose to her feet. Tereus stared up at her in confusion.
We're talking about a cascade. Nobody can force the demons to invade, Narime.
That's what I thought a month ago, but then I met Nathan and learned otherwise.
She began to walk toward the door.
Wait, damn you, Tereus said.
He scrambled to his feet and followed her outside. The beastkin maids didn't block Narime's path, but she waited for Tereus regardless. She owed him, and he had been nothing but friendly toward her, even if she didn't know where he stood regarding the coming conflict.
Don't just rush off. If this is a cascade, then we need to plan for it.
Tereus scowled.
I'll get dressed, then you can take me to my castle. I can check with my champions.
We can't reach anybody, you know, Narime said.
I am the regent of this province, and this city is my home. I will ensure its safety,
Tereus thundered. He glared at her.
I know you can teleport. Afterward, let's talk about everything else, and this Nathan Straub you're so smitten with.
Her cheeks flushed, and Narime looked away. Tereus didn't waste any time. His footsteps echoed along the hallway as he stomped into his bedroom and changed into something that didn't look like a bathrobe. Narime didn't bother to change. Mystic foxes looked odd to everybody anyway, and she liked wearing a kimono, although she did put on her shoes. Once she teleported the two of them to Tereus's castle, she left him to chat with his champions. His bastion was deployed at the Hakim Desert, and the two champions he left behind had complete command of the province's security. The duo gem in command was a horse beastkin. Her eyes held a nasty look whenever she looked at Tereus, but she held herself in check. The look of fear that crossed her face when her gaze met Narime's said everything. Duke Tereus might be friendly toward Narime, but he owned an entire clan of beastkin slaves. This duo-gem champion was one of the lucky few that was spared slavery, but only because a bastion in service to her old owner liked her. Had she really escaped slavery? Narime didn't have the answer to that.
An invasion will happen, but not for a few days, Tereus said,
after pulling them into a spare meeting room. The castle interior was stark compared to her recent lodgings. Cold gray stone, plain oaken furnishings with no decoration or finishing, no cabinets full of expensive liquors or magical percolators tucked into the corner. Her bastion's castle was no different to this. When she returned to the Hakim Desert, she'd spend months on end fighting demons with nothing to keep her distracted besides meditation and cheap wine. It bothered Narime that the luxury of Nathan's castle attracted her.
He had an extensive library that rivaled any noble in the Federation. Every room was as extravagantly decorated as anything in one of Duke Tereus's manors. The food was less impressive, but the champions told her that was because the cooks stuck to seasonal fare. The busty cat girl drooled every time she had talked about the end of winter and the massive plates of meat she was going to devour.
"With communications out, I need to reach out to the border fortresses," Narime said.
"And do what exactly?" Tereus asked. "You said this was suspicious, and I agree, but I'm not sure I agree on who is suspicious."
"You don't? Because there's a man in the Federation who just admitted he's been playing everybody for fools."
"And you just returned from a month with a man who may be doing the same in the Empire. He knows more than you about demons and portals. Who knows what he's capable of?" Tereus said.
"Not this," Narime said. "The only place nearby that could trigger a cascade of this size are the Aurelian Spires. And who do we know has been dealing with the spires?"
Tereus scowled and fell